Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Chicago-based jazz singer and songwriter Dee Alexander as a part of the Chicago Soul Jazz Collective. She celebrates the release of their new 2022 CD, On the Way to Be Free, and it's with this storied Chicago collective of musicians. This talented and storied Chicago institution welcomes one of Chicago's most gifted and respected singers. She hits all the genres, from gospel to R&B, from blues to neo-soul. She grew up in a household that was steeped in the recordings of Dinah Washington and many other jazz greats. Her heart has always been in jazz. She talks about that at length, along with a lot more. Enjoy.
Thank you for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz today.
Oh, not a problem. It's my pleasure.
So this new CD with the Chicago Soul Jazz Collective is a really powerful, just a very audio pleasant journey. And I want to know, how did this union meet up?
John Fournier, who is the leader, one of the co-leaders and also the composer of most of the music, actually reached out to me and asked me if I would mind singing on their next project. And I said, well, sure. So this happened during the pandemic, and we were having Zoom meetings and Zoom rehearsals. He would actually Zoom me and play some of the songs, and I would say, oh, I like that. Oh, no, I don't particularly like that. But most of the songs that he sent me, I really loved, because he said he wrote them with me in mind, and that's why it was so easy. I mean, it was just seamless how this project came to be. All of the guys are just sweethearts, and they're just professional. They're funny. And it's just a group of brothers, you know, and we're with me, and we're just making music to make people happy. So that's how it came to be. And so we've been doing performances, fortunately, at the Jazz Showcase. We've been doing some regular hits there, and also around the city, a couple of festivals, which has been great, because you know how it goes with music. It develops a life of its own, and it's really morphing into something even more beautiful, I think, than we've all anticipated.
So I guess with kind of, you were talking about doing Zoom meetings and remote meetings, you know, we've been going through COVID for the last couple of years, and I'm wondering, you know, what did you learn about yourself over this time that we've been away from live music, largely 2 years, that maybe you didn't realize about yourself that's going to make you stronger as you do promote this new album?
Well, you know, one of the things that has been really in the forefront for me is patience and fortitude. Just to be patient, don't sweat the small stuff, especially being out in the street, everybody, and also to slow down and just take your time. Everybody is in such a hurry, and I admit I was one of them. I was running from gig to gig. I wasn't getting enough rest. I wasn't eating right. You know, I wasn't exercising like I should. Now that, you know, I've been at home for 2 years, it has given me an opportunity to just be still, be peaceful, be kind, be pleasant, and be patient, you know. And that's one of the things that has, what will be, you know. So not starting with small stuff, you know, it's not worth it. And, oh, God, the people are driving crazy. I'm sitting in my car right now, and people are driving crazy, and they're speeding, and I just let them go by, and people will cut in front of me and cut me off or whatever, and I just go right ahead, you know, go right ahead as long as we get there safely, get to our destination safely in one piece. Those are the things that I've really developed from this time off. And the thing is, it's affecting all of us. It's not just me. So none of us should take any of this personally, because it's global. It's happened all over the world. There's a reason for that. So.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I've noticed here in Kansas City, people on the roadways have just turned into a whole different monster.
They really have.
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. It's daunting. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like you either have you saying, all right, go ahead, do your thing. I'm just going to do my thing. I'm going to get through this. And there's other people that are just really like, it's, you know, pedal to the metal. It's wild. So, you know, you really have a pulse on Chicago. This collective really seems to kind of exude the talents and the vision of Chicago jazz. So for anybody on the outside that picks up this disc and gets in there, talk to me about Chicago jazz. What's the importance of you being with this collective and presenting this flavor of Chicago?
You know, as we all know, there's a deep history of music, musicians, culture, art in Chicago, and I'm just really happy to be a part of this scene because it's wealthy. Also to do my part to just spread the joy that we have right here in Chicago of being from Chicago. Sometimes we get a bad rap from the coast, but, you know, some of the greatest and strongest musicians come from right here in the Midwest, you know. And I just want for the collective, I think a collective is the operative word because we are a collective. Globally, we are a collective. And we're just trying to make some great music and make people happy, music with messages that are positive about love and about life. And, you know, that's love is the answer. You know, it's all about love. At the bottom line, is that.
Well, and I think that's the important thing now as we kind of reemerge, you know, hopefully there's more of a cognizance with the audience and appreciation for live music as we do get back to things.
Well, you know, I just returned from, I had an opportunity to go to Germany and to perform in Germany and Vienna and Austria last month. And I'm going to tell you, the audiences there were crazy. You know, as soon as we walked on the stage, they were, because of, you know, especially for obvious reasons and the things that they're dealing with, and they're closer to Ukraine, and I really feel for them over there. And I went there with a message of love and hope. And I went there by myself and hooked up with some musicians that, a couple of German musicians and another a wonderful pianist named Danny Grisette, who's from California that lived in Brooklyn, and now he lives in Vienna. And so I got together with Wolfram Dirtschmidt and Dusan Novakov, who are two German musicians that I've worked with before. And, you know, it's amazing. People are like, well, how do you go over there and how do you work with people that you've never worked with before? I said, well, music is a universal language. And I took music with me, and we really just had, like, one rehearsal. And then we went and did these concerts, and they went over better than even anticipated. It was like we were a working group, and the audience was hungry. Everyone is hungry for this music. Being on shutdown, of course, we can listen to our music at home, but there's nothing like the interaction between the audience and the musicians. There's nothing like it under the sun.
So let's go back to the beginnings of your life. How did the jaws of jazz, so to speak, get you, and how did this become your life?
Well, I have to thank my mother for that. My mother exposed me to this music as a child. She played her records, you know, her classics, Billie Holiday, Coltrane, Miles, and I just developed this appreciation for this music as a child. And I've always been interested in singing and music. It's just in my DNA. My father was a bass player, although he didn't pursue the career, but and throughout high school, grammar school and high school, I was always involved in musicals, anything artistic, dance related, art related. The rest is history. I also want to thank a gentleman that was my mentor. His name was Light Henry Huff, and he kind of nudged me into the kind of creative music because I'm also a member of the AACM. So I was able to also get a taste of the creative end of the music as well. So I've just been, you know, I have a lot of people that I thank, a lot of mentors, Von Freeman, Ken Chaney, Light Henry Huff, as well as some of the current musicians that I'm working with, like Miguel de la Serna, who's a good friend of mine, also a pianist that I work with. I also work with John McLean, who many will know from working with Kurt Elling. So I have a lot of great people that I've been working with that have been really feeding me great energy and encouraging me, and it's just been reciprocal as well. It's been a great journey. I'm still on this journey as long as I have breath in my lungs.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
What was the first live jazz show you ever saw in person that really made you think, wow, I want to do that someday?
Oh, my God. I remember seeing Carmen McRae at Ratso's here in Chicago. This club was on North Lincoln. And when I saw her, that's what I said. Oh, my God. I really want to do this. But I didn't come from, I'm kind of like John Coltrane. You know, John Coltrane started off, you know, playing R&B. I tried to fashion myself as being the next Chaka Khan or Gladys Knight, and it just never didn't pan out that way. You know, I started singing, you know, in high school with soul groups and bands, and I liked it, but I love the freedom of jazz. I love how you can just, you know, take chances and try different things, and, you know, if it doesn't work, on to the next thing. So, I mean, I've been influenced by so many. I mean, James Brown is one of my great influences. I love the Temptations. And, of course, like I said, I love Chaka Khan and Gladys Knight. I grew up with that music. But when I first heard, I tell you a story that my mom tells me that when I was a youngster, I was in my onesie, and she said I came into the kitchen wiping my eyes, asking her, who is that lady crying about her man? It was Billie Holiday.
Wow.
I just remember her voice being so different and haunting, even as a 3-4 year old, you know, growing up here in the inner city of Chicago and loving this music all along and being able to, she said, I would sing along with Miles. I was like my own little baby scat version of, you know, emulating his solos. Even when I was a kid, you know, it just stuck with me. And
yeah,
it's still with me to this day. Yeah.
What are you the proudest of up to this point in your career?
Oh, God. What am I the proudest of? Well, I am proud that I was a working artist. I had 2 sons that I'm very proud of. And I was a working mom, as well as I would work from 8:30 to 5. I'd come home. In the morning, I took my kids to school. In the evening, I came home. I did help them with their homework. Thank goodness I had an extended family, my grandmother, that really helped me. I was able to put them to bed, and then I'd go do gigs for 5 nights. I don't know how I did it. I mean, I couldn't do it now. But when you're younger, you know, you have the energy and the stamina and the wherewithal. I couldn't even imagine doing that now. I'm just proud that I've survived, and I'm still doing this. And I'm very happy doing it. And I couldn't imagine my life without music. I just couldn't imagine it. So I'm really proud that I'm here in Chicago, and I've worked with some of the greatest musicians here in Chicago. And I'm still here. I'm still here, and I'm still doing it. And people are still calling me for gigs. And I mean, it's wonderful to do gigs here and to be called abroad as well. So. Not be called abroad, but be called.
Yeah, that was quite an alliteration there. Absolutely. I like it. You know, you're talking about Vaughn Freeman, and it's always amazing every time I talk to people from Chicago how many careers he helped launch. And I'm curious, from the legends and luminaries that you've been around up to this point in your career, what did they teach you that you teach younger musicians that you get around?
They taught me that you should be able to communicate with the musicians, to be able to know your songs, know the keys of your songs, know how to count them in, and to be consistent and to keep learning. There's always something new to learn. Keep learning new songs, new lyrics, even in terms of vocalese, because I really like emulating different instruments. I'm always listening for the next sound because that's one of the things that is, that one of the things that Max Roach said. He was always, I just read a piece on one of his recordings, how much he loved the human voice and all the different textures of the human voice. I'm always looking for that next texture or something, that next sound that I can incorporate into what I'm doing. And one of the things that I've learned is never be afraid to take chances. Always try different things. And this is the thing that I share with younger people that I work with as well. Don't be afraid to try different things, you know, because when you get in a rut, it's like the audience and the musicians will know, don't let everybody know what your next riff is going to be. You know, they don't, not to anticipate what your next riff is going to be. Just try different things. If it works, fine. If it doesn't, then try something else. So that's what I've learned from, and I'm still learning.
Sure. So why do you love jazz?
I love jazz because of the freedom of it. I'm an Aquarian, and I'm a free spirit. I don't like to be contained, and I love all of the different directions that you can go as far as the music is concerned. And I love being a vocalist because I love telling a story, and I love hearing stories from other vocalists as well. So that's what it means to me.
If you could get into a time machine and go back in time, and you could see anybody ever in the history of jazz, where are you going? Who are you going to see?
How much time do we have?
Well, no. I don't know. Probably forever.
Oh, my God. You know, I've never seen John Coltrane perform, and I've heard so many stories. A great friend of mine, Maurice Roberts, who's no longer with us, he's passed on, told me a story about seeing Coltrane here in Chicago at a club that was called McKee's. And he was a kid, but his father knew the owner, and he would let him sit at the bar. Sorry, a motorcycle is going by. Bar and sip sarsaparilla. And he said Coltrane came into the club, and the band members were already there in the booth sitting with their ladies. He said Coltrane would come in. He wouldn't say a word. He had his coat draped over his shoulders, and he had all of his horns, his flute, saxophones under his arms, and he would just shrug his shoulders, and the coat would fall to the floor, and he would set up. He wouldn't say a word to the musicians. Didn't say one word to the musicians. He's setting up everything, and then he would just start playing. The musicians, when he came in, the musicians would get up, they would go to their respective instruments, and they would just start adjusting themselves. And Coltrane would just start playing, and the musicians would start hitting right along with him. There was never verbally, he didn't say, okay, we're going to do this next. He would just start playing, and they were right there with him. And I would give my right arm to be in a position to witness that. I think that's one of the coolest things. I even, like, when I work with certain groups, I think the Chicago Soul Jazz Collective, we're trying to get to that point where we can just go innately from one tune to the next without just let it segue right on. So it's just like a long, long playing, like an LP. You know, it's one track, and it's just going on, and the music, and everybody's feeling it. And there's, like, swells, you know, there's dynamics, you know, it goes really soft. And then all of a sudden, you know, Marcus on trumpet, he'll come out and just blare something, and then it'll go real soft again. You know, that's one of the things that I hope we get to that point, and we will by doing it. But if I could go back in time, I would love to go back in time as far as a musician is concerned. But as far as singers are concerned, I would have loved to witness Billie Holiday in her prime, you know, when she was at the top of her game. I would have loved to be in a position to see her perform and to actually talk with her. I've also I've done a project with the Metropolitan Jazz Octet, and it's called It's Too Hot for Words, and it was the music of Billie Holiday. So I really delved into her music, and it became a very personal thing for me. It was almost like I just kind of like picked up on her spirit, especially when I did Strange Fruit. I could never do it without closing my eyes and actually visualizing every word of that song that I was singing about the blood on the leaves. I could see the blood on the leaves, and just wondering what she felt like when she sang that particular song.
So everyone has a perception or an idea of you, your family, your friends, your fans, but you live your life. Who do you think you are?
Oh, I don't know yet. I'm still trying to find out. I'm still trying to figure out who this girl is. Still trying to figure it out. It's, you know, it's a work in progress, man.
I like it. That's sometimes that answer. The brevity of it is more powerful than anything else. Dee, thank you for taking some time out for Neon Jazz. Good luck with the album and the return to live music. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you talking with me.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Chicago, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Dee for time, music, and stories. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit neonjazz@youtube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to neonjazz.blogspot.com. And finally, for everything Joe Domino related, go to joedomino.com. And if you feel like it, donate to Neon Jazz right there. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.